Not all of us got to go this week, but I thought it was a nice entertainment for you. My talk is about anonymous communication, anonymous quantum communication. And this is a topic in cryptography, but cryptography in the broad sense. It's not just about sending private messages using keys, but it's also about protecting private information in a multi-party computation scenario. The talk is fundamentally from a computer science point of view, but I also hope that those of you who are involved in experiments might be interested to see how this protocol works. This protocol is new, by the way, and maybe you have ideas on implementing at least small-scale implementations of this protocol. That would be very interesting, and I'd be interested to hear from you. Okay, so first I'll start by telling you about the model that I'll be working in. And I thought that an example would be appropriate in this context. And this starts with a story. I was having lunch the other day with a friend, and he is doing very interesting research on modeling the movement of ships on the St. Lawrence close to Tadoussac, where the ships bring tourists out to see the whales. And he was telling me that the ships communicate in two different ways. So here we have a scenario with five ships, and they have access to a broadcast radio, which allows to send messages. It's a broadcast. This is interesting, for instance, to send information regarding the weather so that everybody gets the same information, useful information usually. But the ship captains also have their private cell phones, and these are used to communicate privately. This could be used, for instance, in a scenario where one captain has encountered a whale and wishes to tell his friends about the position of the whale without telling his competition. There are rules that you can only have a certain amount of ships around a whale at any certain point in time. So this would allow just the friends to come close to the whales. This scenario is actually exactly corresponds to the model that I'll be working in. The broadcast channel we'll be using a broadcast channel, which allows each participant to send a message to every other participant in a way that every other participant receives the same message, and they know the origin of the message. And the cell phones correspond to private classical channels, where the messages can be sent and nobody can intercept the message and read it. What kind of task could these ships wish to accomplish in their scenario, given these two resources? Well, one of the tasks is anonymous communication. And first of all, what do we wish to accomplish? There are two ships that I've labeled two captains, Captain Cook and Captain Crunch. And Captain Cook wants to send a message to Captain Crunch. So the protocol allows him to do exactly this. The only thing that Captain Crunch sees is he sees that he's received a message, but he doesn't know from who it comes or who sent this message. And from the point of view of the other participants, all they see is that a message was sent, but they don't know who sent it, they don't know who's the sender, they don't know who's the receiver, and they don't have access to the contents of the message. So one application of this protocol would be anonymous whistleblowing. So you could have, for instance, Captain Cook has witnessed some illegal activity from another ship, and he wishes to notify the authorities. Maybe Captain Crunch is in a certain authority position, but he wants to announce this anonymously. So he doesn't want anybody to know that he's even talked to Captain Crunch, and he doesn't want Captain Crunch to know that he's the one who's blowing the whistle. So this scenario would allow him to do exactly that. Another application would be anonymous music downloading. So say I'm at this computer and I just have a brand new iPod. And I wish to download a music file that's at this computer, and this is a peer-to-peer file sharing network. But I don't want anybody to know that I've downloaded this music. I guess maybe this could prevent some legal this could prevent me from getting into any legal trouble, perhaps. But anyways, I want to get this music file. I don't want anybody to know that I've even asked for it. So how can I do this? I generate a key that would be long enough to encrypt the music file. I send anonymously this key to this other computer, I guess the server. And so the server receives a key, doesn't know who it comes from, but the key would be accompanied with a request for this song. He encrypts the song with this key, and then broadcasts the message, so everybody gets a copy of this encrypted song. But I'm the only one who can decrypt the message, so this message doesn't mean anything to all the others. I have a key, I can simply decrypt the message, and then I have the music file. After preparing this talk, I realized that there's a problem with this protocol. So maybe somebody has noticed what's going wrong in this scenario. There's some anonymity that's not perfectly... that's not perfect. So has anybody noticed what goes on here? When this computer broadcasts this message, he's saying, I'm the one who received the request. I'm the one sending the message. So there's a way around this. And that would be for everybody to broadcast a random message. So each of these computers would also broadcast, even I would broadcast a random message. So nobody would know that this is the computer that's actually sending the meaningful message. Although I would know, of course, that this is the computer that's sending the meaningful message, and I can decrypt the message. So now we have two applications. This is at least in the classical scenario, and of course later on we'll be talking about quantum music files and quantum whistleblowing, I guess. In the general multi-party scenario, we don't trust the participants to follow the protocol correctly. So these participants are called dishonest, and what they can do is they can either deviate from the protocol, and they can also share their information, so that's called colluding, in order to try to violate either the privacy of the inputs or to try to change the output of the computation. And these are two things that we want to avoid. And a protocol is called secure if the output is correct and the individual inputs are always private, even in the presence of a collusion of dishonest participants. In the protocols that I'm going to tell you about today, we're not going to make any hypothesis on the number of honest participants or the number of dishonest participants, and we're not going to make any computational assumptions. So the security of the protocols doesn't depend on factoring, on the difficulty of factoring or of breaking some other computational schemes. If you've heard of a multi-party computation before, you've probably heard of the fundamental results that tell us that if we have some sort of guarantee that a majority of the participants are honest, then we can accomplish any function in a multi-party distributed scenario with perfect security. So these were results of the late 80s. And recently, there are similar results in the quantum scenario. If we have a majority of honest participants, we can also accomplish any distributed task. And I just remembered, I'm sorry, Sébastien is one of the co-authors on this work, and he's sitting in the room right here. So if you want to talk to him about this work, I'm sure he'd be happy to. A talk about anonymity would probably not be complete without at least mentioning the Dynamic Cryptographers Protocol. This was one of the first situations, or probably the first situation, where some sort of anonymous task was accomplished perfectly with information theoretical security. And I'd like to take a moment to explain this to you, although it's not directly related to the quantum protocol. I think it's probably worth just looking at how this protocol works. So the question, the scenario is, and this is the original scenario that David Chaum proposed in 88, there's a group of cryptographers that are going out for lunch, maybe they're at a conference or something, and at the end of the meal they're informed that somebody has anonymously paid the bill. They have a promise that the person who paid is either the NSA or it's one of the cryptographers that's sitting at the dinner table. The cryptographers want to find out which of the situation it is. Is it the NSA or is it one of them? but they don't want to reveal private, they don't want to reveal their private information. Nobody wants to say, hey, I paid. So how can they accomplish this to find out what the case is? So I have a small example with four participants. And they start out by each generating a string of even parity. That means that the number of ones in the string is even. So Alice generates this string here, this row, Bob this one, and Charlie, and then Dave. And they distribute the string such that they keep a bit for themselves and send one bit to each other participant. So for instance, Alice keeps a bit here, sends one to Bob, one to Charlie, and one to Dave. So they do this using their private channels. So they've each received four bits, including their own. They compute the parity of these four bits, which is in this row right here. So Alice computes 1 + 1 + 1 mod 2, that's 1, et cetera. They've each computed one parity bit. If they were to broadcast these bits, we know that the parity of these bits would be even. This is simply because the sum of the entire table is even. So the parity of the sum of the table, of the sum of the columns, is also going to be even. So far, they haven't used their inputs yet, so of course they have to do this. So they each have a private input. In this situation, Bob has paid for the meal. So he has 1, everybody else has a 0. They compute the parity of this parity bit that they've computed from the row, from the column, as well as their input bit, and they broadcast that result. So Alice broadcasts 1, Bob 1, Charlie 1, and Dave 0. And the sum of the broadcasted bits is equal to 0 if the NSA paid, and it's equal to 1 if somebody in the group has paid. This is pretty easy to see because the sum of these broadcasted bits is the sum of this row plus the sum of this row. And the sum of the first row was even, so if this is odd, then the sum here is going to be odd, which is the case right here. To see how this protocol preserves privacy, what we can do, let's analyze a scenario where Alice is honest and see if the other three participants can break her privacy. First of all, if all the three other participants, B, C, and D, are cheating, then there's nothing really to protect, because if they're cheating, they're going to share their information, and they're going to know what Alice input. So if they input 1, and they see that obviously Alice is going to input 0, and if they input 0, they're going to see whether or not Alice is paid. So the only situation we have to look at is when two of them are dishonest, so maybe Charlie and Dave collude. But in this case, this bit here is going to act like a one-time pad on Alice's private input. And so it follows that this broadcast bit is perfectly hides the Alice's input. So that's kind of the general argument. In David Chaum's scenario, though, we have to trust that the participants are honest. So if they're dishonest, they could either two of them could say that they've paid, therefore it looks like the NSA has paid, but that's not the case. Or even worse, the last participant to broadcast, so Charlie here, has an unfair advantage because he can compute the output of the protocol and change his input as a function of this output. So that's why we say that the protocol only works for honest participants. Recently, I worked with NATAP to find a whole category of classical protocols that accomplish multi-party secure computation in the scenario where there's no assumption on the number of cheating parties. I'm going to tell you about the functionalities that we implement, but not exactly how they work. These functionalities are going to be used later in the quantum anonymous communication protocol. And I should say also that in hindsight, these protocols are inspired by David Chaum's Dynamic Cryptographers protocol, but we've added some sort of randomness and many iterations in order to get rid of the assumption that the participants should be honest. One protocol that we have is multiple sender detection. So this protocol allows participants to input a value. So say they input 1 if they wish to be a sender in the protocol. And the output is going to tell us whether or not if there's one sender or more than one sender. if there's more than one sender, we're just going to abort the protocol, maybe try again later. And because we know that there's no point in trying, if there's many senders, the protocol's not going to work. Another protocol that we have is receiver notification. So it's important for the sender to be able to say, hey, Bob, I want to talk to you. And then the receiver is going to act appropriately. The receiver is going to have a different behavior, yet his behavior is going to be indistinguishable from the behavior of the other participants. This is essential in order to for him to remain anonymous. Now, the protocol is a logical OR. Each participant inputs a single bit, and the output is a logical OR of the input bits. And this is going to be useful, again, in a scenario where if somebody has seen something go wrong, they want to make the protocol abort, but they don't want to tell that they're the ones making the protocol abort. So again, this will be essential. And finally, probably the most important protocol is classical anonymous message transmission. So for instance, the anonymous whistleblowing or the anonymous file downloading is what we've implemented. And as far as I know, this is the first time that this is done in our model with no computational assumptions and no assumptions on the number of honest participants. Somehow a price to pay for the fact that we make no assumption on the number of honest participants is that any participant can make the protocol abort, or any cheater can cause the protocols to abort. And a way to see this is that we've removed all the assumptions, and it seems like this is kind of unavoidable. I don't quite have a proof, but it seems intuitively that there's no way to get around this fact that the protocols, that anybody can make the protocol abort. So of course we're here at a quantum conference, and the scenario is now that we want to send an anonymous quantum message. The ships now have quantum cell phones, and they can communicate qubits privately. But the broadcast channel can stay classical, and that's probably a good thing, because I don't know exactly what a quantum broadcast would be. So in this scenario, Captain Cook has a quantum state and wishes to transmit it anonymously so that Captain Crunch receives a quantum state but doesn't know who it comes from. And from the point of view of the other participants, all they know is that the message has been sent. And there's a new requirement in the context of quantum anonymous transmission. So we know that we can't copy, in general, we can't copy quantum information, but classical information can be copied. So what if the protocol aborts? In a classical scenario, the sender can just keep a backup copy of his classical message and try again later. In the quantum scenario, we want him to be able to try again later. So it should be the case that the quantum state is either sent correctly or it stays with the sender. So another way of saying this is that the quantum state should never be destroyed. An important concept in the context of anonymous quantum communication is anonymous entanglement. So we'll say that the sender and receiver share anonymous entanglement if they share entanglement, plus the sender knows who he shares entanglement with, that is the receiver, but the receiver has no idea that he knows that he has this entangled state, but he doesn't know who's at the other end. And anonymous entanglement can be used for some sort of anonymous teleportation. So say we magically had this perfect resource between the sender and the receiver called anonymous entanglement. So the sender could simply take his quantum state, perform a teleportation measurement, so a Bell state measurement, to get two classical bits. He sends the two classical bits to the receiver, and very important that he send these two classical bits using classical anonymous message transmission, otherwise the receiver would know who the sender is. The receiver receives these two classical bits, makes a correction, And now he has the state side. He doesn't know who sent it. Therefore, this is anonymous quantum communication. But how could we generate this anonymous entanglement? Matthias Cristandel and Stephanie Vayner looked into this problem, and they came up with a very simple solution, at least in the situation where the participants must be honest. So first of all, the participants start by sharing the GHZ state. Everybody measures in the Hadamard basis except the sender and the receiver. So each participant is going to have one bit of output corresponding to his measurement result. And these measurement results are sent using the broadcast channel. The sender and receiver, they have to stay anonymous, so they kind of pretend that they measured. They send a random bit. The sender knows who he is, and he knows who the receiver is. So he can factor these random bits out, and he knows the parity of the measurement outcomes. And by the properties of the GHZ state, it's pretty easy to check that if the parity of these measured bits is even, the sender and the receiver are in the 5 plus state, whereas if the parity of these measured bits is odd, the sender and the receiver are in the 5 minus state. So if the sender wants to make sure that they're in the 5 plus state, he can simply apply a correction if necessary, and then he's sure that they share anonymous entanglement in the 5 plus state. Yeah, the receiver at this point, we assume that he knows that he's going to receive the message. For example, we can do the receiver notification protocol first. We want to see what we can do in the situation where there is no assumption on the number of honest participants. And some initial work was done in this model by Jan Buda and Josef Sposchka. Their model is slightly different in that the receiver is public, but this doesn't make a huge difference. More importantly, there's a problem with their protocol. Their protocol can abort, but the cheaters can act in a way such that when the protocol aborts, they get some small bit of information about the identity of the sender. So with our definition, this means that the protocol is completely broken, if you want. So just to emphasize this, because this is actually a problem that we came up with when we were looking for a quantum anonymous message transmission protocol. We had some prototypes, and it seemed like each time that we analyzed them closely, we had the same problem. So that is that there's a certain behavior that the cheaters can adopt such that when the protocol aborts, they can kind of know, oh, the sender wasn't here, or the sender was here. They have some information about these identities, and this is something that is considered insecure. So we worked on this problem, and for a while, actually, we thought maybe this task was impossible because it seemed like each thing that we tried didn't work. But finally, we have a nice protocol and a pretty simple proof of security. And this is the main contribution. So we present the first protocol for the anonymous transmission of a quantum state that is information theoretically secure against an active adversary. That means that the participants can actively cheat without any assumption on the number of corrupt participants. The anonymity of the sender and receiver is perfectly preserved, and the privacy of the quantum state is protected except with exponentially small probability. So what does this mean, except with exponentially small probability? It means that there's a security parameter in the protocol that can be adapted to whatever your comfort level might be. And this has to do with the number of iterations, et cetera. But the complexity of the protocol is still going to be polynomial in the number of participants in the security parameter and probably in the length of the quantum message. Okay, and continuing, even though a single dishonest participant can cause a protocol to abort, the quantum state can only be destroyed with exponentially small probability. If the protocol succeeds, the state is transferred to the receiver, and otherwise it remains in the hands of the sender, provided the receiver is honest. So again, this little detail in brackets is that if the receiver is dishonest, he can obviously destroy the state. He can do whatever he wants with it, so we can't say in that case that the state has not been destroyed, but this is just a special scenario. Here's what a protocol looks like. It has 7 steps. The first 2 steps are classical, and I've already told you about them, although I didn't tell you exactly how to implement them. So first of all, we see if there's more than one sender, we'll try again later maybe, and we'll ask the senders to wait a random amount of time and try to send a message later. Then we do receiver notification so that the receiver knows how to behave in the rest of the protocol. And the next steps I'll explain in detail in the following slides. So there's entanglement distribution, but after entanglement distribution, the state might be bad. There's entanglement verification to make sure that the quantum state that will be used will not violate anonymity. There's anonymous entanglement generation to create the anonymous entanglement, but this entanglement might not be perfect. So then there's step 6 to fix that, and finally step 7 to do anonymous teleportation such that the quantum state will never be lost. So now we're going to talk about steps 3 to 7. In entanglement distribution, an arbitrarily chosen participant generates and distributes a sufficient amount of dead states. So sufficient amount means it depends on the security parameter and on the length of the quantum message. We don't really trust this participant to behave correctly, but if he hasn't sent correct dead states in the future steps that I'll tell you about, the protocol will abort. But importantly, and as I've already highlighted in the case of attacks on previous protocols, is that the information will not be useful in finding the identity of the sender of the or the receiver, and it won't help in gaining any information about the quantum message. The next step is entanglement verification. And here I've given an example with 3 participants. And I've omitted the normalization factors. Oops. So the participants, if everything goes correctly, if the GHZ state has been distributed correctly, they start with this state here. They will then each make 2 copies of their state. And by copy, I mean they take an auxiliary qubit, they put it in the zero state, and then they perform a control knot with the source being their qubit here. So then the state after this copy is this one here. Each participant has 3 qubits. Each participant keeps a qubit to himself and sends the 2 other qubits to the other 2 participants. So this is the same state here after the distribution. And Alice has a qubit from herself, one from Bob, and one from Charlie, etc. Each participant now still has 3 qubits, and they perform a measurement. And the point of the measurement is to find out if their state is symmetric. That is it invariant under permutation? Another way to say that is they perform the measurement which has a single bit as answer, and the question that it answers is a system in the subspace spanned by ket00 and ket11? So in this case, they did have the GHZ state, and we're actually guaranteed that the measurement outcome will be 1, or yes, and the state is not going to change. So what if the measurement outcome is 0 or no? In that situation, the participants will abort the protocol because the state that they have is not invariant under permutation, and it could be used to compromise their anonymity. So it means that somebody has tried to cheat. If the answer is yes, however, then they can continue. And just before continuing, they reset all these auxiliary qubits. So to do that, they do control knot, and then they erase their qubit. And at the end of this entanglement verification step, this is the state, if the step succeeds, of course. So this is a superposition The H means the honest participants. And for the dishonest participants, well, we don't really know what state they have. But what's very important is here is that the state is invariant under permutation of the honest participants. Of course, it won't necessarily be a perfect GHZ state. If it's not a perfect GHZ state, the protocol is going to abort the future step. The next step is anonymous entanglement generation. So this is very similar, if not identical, to what I told you earlier on about the protocol of Matthias Kristandel and Stephanie Vayner. Everybody measures in the Hadamard basis except the sender and the receiver, who do not measure. They all broadcast their result, the sender and receiver broadcasting a random bit. The sender computes the parity of all the broadcasted bits after having removed his own bit in the one of the receiver. And he applies corrections if necessary. And now there's anonymous entanglement. So multiple copies of anonymous entanglement between the sender and the receiver. If everything went correctly. But still, the states might not be perfect. And remember that we never want to lose the quantum state. So this step is actually necessary to make sure that the state psi is never lost on the way over to the receivers. And we need to make sure that the states are perfect. So what we're going to use is a tool called quantum authentication. And this is simply an encoding scheme that makes sure that any modification to the quantum message will be detected. The sender creates perfect copies of phi plus, and he's going to use the already established entanglement to teleport to the receiver an authenticated version of these perfect copies of phi plus. So what this means is that if the channel that's used for the teleportation is perfect, the phi plus states are going to arrive perfectly, and everything is going to, and then the receiver can see that the authentication is correct, and the protocol will continue. If the channel used for the teleportation is imperfect, with very high probability, the quantum authentication is going to fail, and the receiver will, at that point, tell the sender in an anonymous fashion that there's a problem, that they should abort the protocol. So this is kind of what I've said already. The receiver verifies the integrity of the received state. If the shared anonymous entanglement was bad, this will fail. And how does the receiver tell the other participants that there's a problem? Well, this is where we use the classical protocol that I told you about called logical OR. If there's a problem, the receiver inputs 1, and everybody sees that the protocol should abort. If there's no problem, he inputs 0, and the protocol continues. And the final step is fail-safe teleportation. And the point of this step is to make sure that the quantum message is never lost. And I thought it would be easier just to illustrate it with an example. So in this example, there are two Bell states shared between the sender and the receiver. And the sender has, let's say, a 1-qubit state to send. So he uses the first Bell state, does a teleportation measurement, gets 2 classical bits, and the state at the other, we'll call psi hat the state at the receiver's end. He needs to send these 2 bits, B1, B2, to the receiver so that the receiver can perform corrections to get the state psi. Before doing that, he keeps a backup copy of the classical bits. If he succeeds in sending these 2 bits, B1, B2, I've already showed you a slide earlier on about anonymous entanglement. Captain Crunch can then, or the receiver can then, reconstruct psi, and everything will work perfectly. But what if these 2 bits, B1, B2, are intercepted on the way over? And it's a property of the anonymous classical message transmission protocol that this could happen. So we want to make sure that even if these bits are intercepted, the state psi is not lost. It looks right now like there's nothing we can do. Captain Cook has these classical bits. Captain Crunch has this remaining quantum state, but the psi isn't in the picture. If the receiver had these 2 classical bits, he could reconstruct psi, but it looks like right now there's nothing we can do. But we still have 1 entangled Bell pair. So what Captain Crunch does, he does a teleportation measurement between his remaining quantum state and the remaining bell pair, he gets two classical bits. He now wants to send these two classical bits to the sender. He actually doesn't know who the sender is, so that seems like a problem. But the sender knows who the receiver is. So here's what we're going to do, and this really is similar to the situation in the anonymous music downloading protocol that I told you about, especially the bug that needed to be fixed. So everybody generates random bits, including the sender. The receiver keeps his two classical bits from the teleportation, and everybody broadcasts these bits. So to the other participants, it just looks like there's all these random bits that are being broadcast. But the sender knows that the receiver broadcasts two bits that are very interesting to him. These are the classical bits B3 and B4. With this knowledge, B1, B2, B3, B4, and the remaining quantum state that he had from the second teleportation, he can reconstruct psi. So there we go. Even if the protocol aborts, the state psi stays with the sender. Here's the protocol once again, just a recap. So we have the two classical steps, and then the quantum steps to, first of all, distribute the entanglement to make sure that it's not going to compromise anonymity, to establish anonymous entanglement, then to establish perfect anonymous entanglement, and finally, the fail-safe teleportation. And once again, the features of the protocol is that the anonymity is information theoretically secure, and it's also perfect. The privacy of the quantum message is also information theoretically secure, except for exponentially small probability. There's a very, very small probability that the quantum state will actually be compromised. We make no assumption on the number of honest participants, and unfortunately, any participant can make the protocol abort. So thank you. Exactly. So in the fail-safe teleportation, it seems like the state is teleported from the sender to the sender, and that is the case. Because if everything works correctly, the classical bits B1, B2 are sent to the receiver. But the slide that I presented at the end of fail-safe teleportation is what happens if these classical bits are lost. So unfortunately, the protocol is going to abort, and we haven't accomplished the task that we want to accomplish, but the state psi stays with the sender. I think I'll just go back to the picture, if I can. So you're asking if a malicious participant can intercept these classical bits B1, B2, such that the receiver thinks that they're good, but they're not good. Yeah. And the answer is no. If these bits B1, B2 are modified in any way, we're pretty much guaranteed with exponentially small probability, the receiver is going to see that the message was changed. So if he knows that the message was changed, then we're in the situation that I described here, where the bits are actually lost. And the protocol is not going to work, but at least the state psi is going to stay with the sender. All the protocols that I know about anonymous quantum communication are based on GHZ states. It's just so easy when everybody does a Hadamard. How do the others know that they have to transmit random bits? Here. It's in the recipe of the protocol. And if they don't do it, then they're considered cheaters and the protocol just aborts. So they know, I mean, there's a sequence in the protocol and they know that we're at this certain word, they know that we're at step 1.6.3 and they know that they should do this at this point. Sorry? Oh, okay, exactly, thank you. So how do they know that they're in the situation where these two classical bits were lost, right? Well, I think we'll have to do a logical OR where, I guess I didn't mention it at this point, but we'll do a logical OR where the receiver is going to input 1 if the authentication failed, and, no, not the authentication. The receiver is going to input 1 if the anonymous message transmission failed, and then we know that we go into the special case of fail-safe teleportation. Otherwise, everything is correct, is all right, and the protocol succeeds. Yeah, in this situation, the logical OR would be used so that everybody would input a 0 if they're honest. You know, that the recipe of the protocol says input 0, except if you're the receiver and you saw that the classical bits did not arrive correctly. Yes. If someone cheats, you can input a 1. And let's see. It's actually anonymous, so nobody knows that there's a cheater trying to add a 1. But if that happens, the protocol is going to abort, but still, at least the sender is going to have a state psi because they can still do reverse anonymous. They can still do the reverse teleportation. I think the receiver can just ignore the fact that he received the classical bits and pretend that they're lost. You know, somebody else says, these bits did not arrive correctly. So the receiver says, okay, fine. And then he pretends he didn't receive them, and then we continue with the fail-safe teleportation. Sure. Thank you.